Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROSE.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROSE.com/morbidology.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Like most of you, I'm hoping that things will get back to normal soon, and we can hang out with our friends, go to the bar, and even travel. If you're wanting to keep yourself preoccupied while we wait for some normalcy, download Best Fiends. It's been keeping me preoccupied during the past while, and it's a great game filled with cute characters, which is a refreshing break from true crime writing. They've even sponsored today's episode of Morbidology. With Best Fiends, the fun never ends. There's thousands of levels and tons of characters. I'm on level 291, but there's new puzzles to solve each and every day. It's one of those games where 30 minutes really feels like 30 seconds. Best Fiends is super easy to follow and it's fun to play. It's a casual game that won't stress you out, and it's very easy to pass the time with. I find myself playing it before bed, and when I need a break while writing. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. In January of 2013, South Valley in New Mexico and the surrounding area was rocked by an extremely brutal mass murder, which had taken place inside a secluded family home. The area would be even more horrified when they discovered who had been the perpetrator. And in the aftermath, there would be intense media coverage, as well as a massive debate over gun control. It was the 19th of January 2013 when police in South Valley, New Mexico, were called to a home just outside Albuquerque. They had received a phone call from a retired homicide detective who asked them to conduct a welfare check on the Griego family, who lived inside the home. When investigators arrived at the home, they would be met by a horrific scene. There was blood spattered throughout several rooms in the home. They found the lifeless bodies of 51-year-old Greg Griego, his wife, 40-year-old Sarah Griego, 9-year-old Zephaniah, 5-year-old JL, and 2-year-old Angelina. You can see photographs of the victims on the Vodacast app. As soon as the murders were reported in the media, it was announced that Greg and Sarah's 15-year-old son, Nehemiah Griego, had been arrested and charged with the 5 murders. Sheriff Dan Houston stated during a brief press conference, "There's no other way to say it, except that we have a horrific crime scene down there that we are working on."
Sarah Griego, the mother, was shot and killed by the suspect at approximately 1 a.m. 9-year-old Zephaniah was awake, distraught, and was killed shortly after that. It appears that Angelina, the 2-year-old, was killed while sleeping. Jael, the 5-year-old girl, was killed and awake at the time of her killing. Waited approximately 5 hours for the dad, Greg Griego, to come home, which would have been approximately 5 to 6 a.m. We believe that he was shot unexpectedly and was unaware of what had already occurred in the residence.
It wouldn't be long until more details surrounding the mass murder were revealed. After Nehemiah had been arrested for the murders, he readily confessed to what he had done. He said that he first of all killed his mother, Sarah, because he had anger issues and was annoyed at her. Sarah had been asleep in the bed beside 9-year-old Zephaniah when Nehemiah took a .22-caliber pistol from his parents' closet at around midnight. He approached the bed and then shot his mother twice in the face. Zephaniah woke up from the noise of the gunshot. When he asked what was going on, Nehemiah responded that he had just shot and killed their mother. Zephaniah stated to his brother that he didn't believe him. Nehemiah responded by showing his younger brother his mother's bloody and disfigured face before shooting him once in the head. According to Nehemiah, he said that after killing his mother and brother, he had lost his sense of conscience. The commotion had woken up Nehemiah's 2 younger sisters, JL and Angelina, who had been asleep in their own bedroom next door. After killing his brother, Nehemiah opened his sister's bedroom door. By this point, the 2 young girls were screaming and crying. After opening the door, Nehemiah opened fire, killing his 2 younger sisters. JL had been shot once in the head, while Angelina was shot once in the back, chest, and forehead. As these 4 murders had unfolded, Greg had been working an overnight shift at the Albuquerque rescue mission. Nehemiah then retrieved an AR-15 semi-automatic assault-style rifle and waited in a bathroom downstairs for his father to return home. At around 6 a.m., Greg opened the front door, and as he walked past the bathroom door, Nehemiah opened fire, killing his father. Greg had been shot once in the back and chest and twice in the head. Afterwards, he put the AR-15 semi-automatic assault-style rifle into the family's truck, along with a loaded shotgun. Nehemiah informed investigators that after killing his family, he had sent his 12-year-old girlfriend a photograph of his deceased mother. Nehemiah stated that after killing his family, he had planned on killing more people. He reloaded the rifle and loaded a shotgun so that he could drive to a populated area and open fire. He stated that his plan was to shoot at random people and eventually be killed while exchanging gunfire with law enforcement. However, when on the phone to his girlfriend, she convinced him to meet her and her grandmother at Calvary Chapel, to which he complied. Instead of driving to a populated area, he drove to the church. While at the church, Nehemiah spoke with the church pastor and a security guard, who is a retired homicide detective. The security guard, Vince Harrison, had been at the church that morning and led a safety training course on how to deal with a shooter. Nehemiah eventually told the pastor and Vince that he thought his father may have been in an accident, before stating that his family had died in a car crash. Vince later stated, "I knew something wasn't right. I could feel it. I could see it in his eyes and I could see it in his behavior and his demeanor." Nehemiah then changed his story and said that his family were all dead at home. Vince then asked Nehemiah if he could accompany him back home to which he agreed. When Vince and Nehemiah arrived at the family's home, Vince spotted Greg's body through the window. He immediately called 911, and while waiting, Nehemiah went into detail about where each victim was located inside the home and what guns had been used. As Vince said, he was very matter of fact, really cold, so I knew something wasn't right. Nehemiah would tell the responding officers after they found his deceased family that he had come home that morning after spending some time at a friend's home to find his entire family slaughtered. He said that he had put the two weapons in the truck and driven to church as protection. However, suspicions, of course, fell onto Nehemiah, who told multiple people multiple versions of events. Nehemiah would eventually confess that he had been the one to murder his family. Following the confession, it was announced that Nehemiah was being charged on 5 counts of murder and 3 counts of child abuse, resulting in death. Because he was just 15 years old, if he was indicted on the first-degree murder charges, then he would be classified as a serious youthful offender under the state's children's code and would be facing adult penalties. This meant that if he were found guilty, he could face more than 200 years in prison. Each murder charge would come with a 30-year sentence, in addition to 30 years for each child abuse resulting in death charge. However, since he was a juvenile, the judge would have more sentencing discretion. You can learn more about this on the Vodacast app. While the confession was a welcome relief, investigators still had the daunting task of trying to uncover a motivation in the murders. Nehemiah had simply stated that he was annoyed at his mother because of an argument they had gotten into before the murders. However, that didn't explain why he had killed his entire family. The Grego family was well known within the local Christian community. They attended church as a family each Sunday, and Greg had once served as a pastor at Calvary on Osuna, which was one of Albuquerque's largest Christian churches. He was well known within the law enforcement community for his work as a voluntary chaplain, having volunteered at the Metropolitan Detention Center, offering spiritual guidance to inmates as well as 2 firefighters. Fire Chief James Breen would state, "Chaplain Grego was a dedicated professional that passionately served his fellow man and the firefighters of this community. His calming spirit and gentle nature will be greatly missed." In fact, Greg had been instrumental in the development of the Metropolitan Detention Center's chaplain program and had worked extremely hard to get inmates integrated back into the community. It was known as the Straight Street Program for Inmates. In the jail, he had also helped found the God Pod, which had actually been quite a source of controversy, and just the year beforehand, county officials had shut it down after determining that it had violated the religious freedom of other inmates. Sarah had worked as a stay-at-home mother and had homeschooled all of the children. She loved oldies music, history, and reading the Bible. She was a massive animal lover and kept dogs, horses, rabbits, and chickens, all of which she named after biblical figures. In addition to Nehemiah, Zephaniah, Jael, and Angelina, there were 6 other children in the family, but on the night of the shootings, only Nehemiah and the 3 youngest children had been at home. The couple had met back in 1990. Greg had spotted Sarah walking down the street with her brother in California. He was said to be blown away by her beauty and followed her into a store and struck up a conversation. The 2 hit it off immediately and were married in 1994. Zephaniah absolutely doted on his older brother, Nehemiah. They would often play Lego together and go to the local skate park. Their older sister, Vanessa Lightbourne, said, "Zephaniah wanted to be just like him. He acted like him, tried to talk like him." Zephaniah also played the drums and was just starting to get involved in music, much like his older brother. His family said that he had ambitions to one day become a lawyer and could always talk himself out of trouble. Jael was said to be a lover. When she entered or exited a room, she always made sure to hug everybody in the room, and she loved to be held. Her family said that she was her daddy's little princess, but could hold her own with her big brothers. She loved to dress up in pink dresses and wear crowns and jewellery that her aunt had given to her, referring to it as her little princess dress. Angelino was always called the attitude baby because of her facial expressions. Her sister Vanessa said that she loved dancing to hip-hop and doted on her big sister Jael. She hated being away from her parents and was very attached to them, especially her father, Greg. The family's neighbour, Terry Wootan, would describe Greg as a man with a massive heart. However, he said that before moving to New Mexico, Greg had lived in California and had been involved in gangs. He said that Greg had turned his life around when he found God. He stated, what he wanted to do was help people, and he would never quit. There were several people within the community who mentioned Greg's past. He was very open about that past and said that he had been able to connect with inmates so well, especially those with addiction issues and those who struggled with violence, because he himself had once been in that position. Investigators in the community alike would scramble to try and uncover what sort of person Nehemiah was. For one, he didn't have any prior involvement in the juvenile justice system, and police had never been called to the family's home in the past. Those who knew the family said that Nehemiah was always well-behaved and friendly. William Stockman, who worked at maintenance at Calvary Church, said, he was actually a really good kid. He just liked wearing camouflage stuff. But at church, he was just a quiet kind of guy. I don't think anyone would really consider anything in that family going wrong. In fact, when Nehemiah was at the church following the shootings, William had spoken to him. He said that he shook the teenager's hand, but said that something about him that day seemed kind of strange. You can see photographs of Nehemiah on the Vodacast app. A neighbour of the family would say that they often saw Nehemiah and his siblings walking through the neighbourhood, and said that Nehemiah wore nothing but camouflage clothing. According to another neighbour, Nehemiah wanted to be a soldier. His great-grandfather, grandfather, and several aunts and uncles and cousins were either veterans or on active duty, so his ambition was something which had been a common theme in the thread of his family. Nehemiah had a deep love for music and played guitar, bass, and drum. For years he had played at youth and other church services at Calvary Church and competed in wrestling tournaments throughout the state. In fact, Nehemiah had accompanied his father on faith missions in Mexico and helped to care for his younger siblings that he was now charged with murdering. Investigators would reveal that Nehemiah had told them that he had been harboring violent fantasies, which included mass murder and murder-suicide scenarios. He had seemingly planned the murders for at least a week and had allegedly made comments about his plans to other people. However, investigators refused to elaborate any further, stating, that's part of the investigation that's still active. By this point, it was known that Nehemiah had texted a photograph of his mother's body to his 12-year-old girlfriend, and that was also something investigators were looking into. For example, did she know that the murders were going to occur? And if so, why didn't she inform anybody? The murders had come just 3 days after President Barack Obama had presented a sweeping gun control package, which had marked the most comprehensive effort to tighten gun laws within the United States in the past 2 decades. It had been prompted by the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, wherein 20-year-old Adam Lanza opened fire at an elementary school, killing 26 people, including 20 children, aged between 6 and 7 years old. You can learn more about this case on the Vodacast app. Investigators would announce that part of their investigation was looking into whether Greg had a criminal past in California, like some people had mentioned in the media, and if so, whether he was banned from owning the weapons that had been used to murder him and his family. In a cruel twist of fate, Nehemiah had actually been taught how to shoot by his father. If 10 years had passed since his sentence and probation had ended, then Greg would have been allowed to own guns. However, if 10 years hadn't passed, then state and federal law would have prohibited him from owning the guns that were used. New Mexico was one of the 36 states at the time that did not require a background check for somebody purchasing firearms at a gun show or from private sellers. In fact, getting rid of the gun show loophole was one of the proposals that President Barack Obama had put forward in a bid to combat gun violence in the United States. It would be discovered that the firearms used in the shooting had been purchased legally. However, those firearms had been purchased by friends of Greg and either sold to Greg or simply given to Greg. The Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives would be called in to trace the history of the two murder weapons, as well as two shotguns. One, which Nehemiah had loaded into the family's truck after the murders. Fume is a non-electrical, natural, wooden hand-crafted inhaler made to receive the benefits of essential oils, and it's the number one natural way to quit smoking. With Fume, you simply add the oil-infused core and inhale. They taste and smell absolutely amazing and curb cravings. Fume takes all of the benefits of super plants, behavioural science and beautiful design to make quitting smoking that bit easier. My personal favourite oil-infused cores are the peppermint one as well as the black pepper one. They're great to unwind with after a stressful day, especially if you're trying to kick your smoking or vaping habit. Fume really is the perfect alternative. Furthermore, for each Fume that is sold, they feed 6 orphans. So not only are you getting an amazing product, you're supporting children in need. Just head to breathefume.com/morbidology. That is breathefume.com/morbidology. And enter code MORBIDOLOGY for 10% off your order. You can even take a quiz to find out what cores are best suited for you. And definitely check out the Quit Naturally pack. Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalised formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/morbidology. That is prose.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, prose.com/morbidology.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you, and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counselling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counselling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counselling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counsellors specialising in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counsellor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. 2 days after the murders, the Griego family would issue a statement about Nehemiah, which read in part, Our family is heartbroken over this senseless tragedy. We have not been able to comprehend what led to this incredibly sad situation. However, we are deeply concerned about the portrayal in some media of Nehemiah as some kind of monster. It is clear to those of us who know and love him that something went terribly wrong. Whether it was a mental breakdown or some deeper undiagnosed psychological issue, we can't be sure yet. What we do know is that none of us, even in our wildest nightmares, could have imagined that he could have done something like this. There's so much more to the Nehemiah we know than what the media is portraying. We know him as a bright, curious, and incredibly talented young man. In their statement, they also mentioned gun control, stating, "To be clear, our family has differing views on gun rights and gun control." Meanwhile, a candlelight vigil was held in memory of Greg, Sarah, Zephaniah, Jael, and Angelina in the Calvary Church. There was a police escort while chaplains and members of the fire department lined the procession as the urns of the family were carried into the church. Photographs of the five victims were displayed on digital screens at the front of the church, and it was estimated that around 2,000 people attended the vigil. Pastor Skip Heitzig led the service as he said, "Our hearts break, Lord. We, often in times like these, scratch our heads and wonder why. We are at a loss for words, and we are certainly at a loss for explanation." He spoke about the family, stating that Greg was dedicated to helping others find God. He urged the mourners to remember that forgiveness and restoration, two tenets that were dear to Greg, would be important as the community attempted to move forward and heal from the tragedy. Greg was remembered for his hearty laugh and his endless commitment to others, while Sarah was remembered for her amazing cooking. Annette Grego, one of Greg's adult daughters, said that her father never gave up on any of them, never stopped giving them Jesus, and said that he would have wanted the same for Nehemiah. She said, "So if you wonder where we stand alongside our brother." The family's funeral was held just days later, and it was not open to the public. It was held at the Calvary Church and was called a life celebration service. Nehemiah's defense attorney, Jeff Buckles, would complain in the media that he believed that investigators on the case were cherry-picking the most damaging pieces of information to release in the media. He said that the information being presented had led to a number of sensationalist headlines that threatened to finish Nehemiah's case in the public mind before it had fairly begun. He cited the fact that it had been reported that Nehemiah had planned to kill more people as evidence of this, stating, "This theory is repeated and repeated, even though Nehemiah appeared to have every chance to carry out such a plan, but did not." He revealed that the defense were planning on consulting experts in the areas of mental health, as well as the effects of violent video games on vulnerable boys. Towards the end of the month, Nehemiah's family told the Associated Press they were going to stand by him and support him as his case moved through the justice system. His older sister, Annette, said that there was absolutely no signs that something like this could have ever happened. She said that Nehemiah was a normal teenager who was close with his family, loved his family. She referred to the murders as a terrible mistake and said that they still didn't know why they had occurred, stating that he could have had a mental breakdown, but right now, they weren't sure. She said that they were critical of the investigation and were pushing for a psychiatric examination in the hopes that it could provide some answers. His uncle Eric said that they wanted Nehemiah to have the fairest chance to turn around his life and that he not be cast away in an adult prison system. His family would state that they were very concerned about the murder case, including the circumstances surrounding Nehemiah's confession. He had made the confession without a lawyer or family member present, and his family weren't too happy about that. According to Sheriff Houston, however, investigators had read Nehemiah his Miranda rights and asked him whether he wanted a lawyer or adult present. He declined and said that he wanted to speak with investigators alone. According to his family, however, he was in no condition to give a statement, especially alone. His uncle Eric stated, "No lawyer, no adult, no access to any family members. He makes a statement. If that's not damaging enough, for us the hardest thing is that became fact." Eric would reveal some more information about the family, and in particular his brother Greg's past. He said that Greg had fallen into a life of drugs and gangs after a stint in the 82nd Airborne Division. He said that his life was transformed when he became a Christian while incarcerated in California in the 1990s. Before Greg had met Sarah, he had 5 other children, and then had 5 more with Sarah. In addition to the children being homeschooled, Eric revealed that Greg was what he would call old school. He said that he liked his daughters to have long hair because it was more feminine, and he liked his sons to be tough. He didn't keep the weapons in the home locked in a gun safe, and simply kept them in the closet because he wanted Nehemiah to be able to defend his family when Greg wasn't home. On their front door, they had a sticker which read, "This home is protected by Wesson and Smith, which is a manufacturer of firearms." He said that while Greg and Sarah were certainly strict parents, they were also very loving. He said that the children were not allowed to date until reaching a certain age. Clearly, Nehemiah didn't listen to this specific rule, considering the fact he had a girlfriend 2 years younger than him. Early the following year, a grand jury would indict Nehemiah on 5 counts of first-degree murder and 3 counts of child abuse resulting in death. It was announced that the case would be proceeding through the legal system as if he were an adult. Defense Buckles issued a statement saying that he was disappointed in the decision. A couple of months later, Defense Buckles said that Nehemiah would be pleading not guilty by reason of insanity. He told the judge that competency would be in play during the case, stating, "We believe he was incapable of forming a specific intent, which would be required in this case." The murder case was slowly making its way through the justice system, and in March of 2015, Nehemiah underwent a brain scan at the Mind Research Institution. However, in October, Nehemiah appeared in court where he pleaded guilty to the murders of his parents and his 3 younger siblings. He entered a guilty plea to second-degree murder in the deaths of his parents, and entered a guilty plea to 3 counts of child abuse resulting in death in the deaths of his siblings. The guilty plea ended more than 2.5 years of litigation. Defense Buckles said that Nehemiah had received extensive treatment from the state, and both parties believed that the guilty plea was the best resolution for both Nehemiah and his family. The sentencing phase was still to follow, and it could range from probation to 3 life sentences plus 30 years if Nehemiah was sentenced as an adult. If sentenced as a juvenile, however, he could remain in the custody of the State Children, Youth and Families Department until the age of 21. The sentencing phase began a couple of months later, and it would be up to a judge to decide Nehemiah's fate. Both the prosecution and the defence would be presenting evidence. The prosecution, in an attempt to have Nehemiah sentenced as an adult, and the defence in an attempt to have Nehemiah sentenced as a juvenile. Some family members would send a letter to the judge in support of sentencing Nehemiah as an adult. It read in part, "Nehemiah has not expressed any remorse, and he possessed the mental capacity to know right from wrong at the time of the murders, and was fully cognizant of his murderous actions." Defense attorney Stephen Taylor said during his opening statements that Nehemiah had been beaten by his father while a young boy, and suggested that one severe beating had left him with a traumatic brain injury. He said that Nehemiah had been abused by his father, who had forbidden him from having friends outside of church.
Nehemiah was not allowed to go to school. He was not allowed to have friends outside of the church. And he was not allowed to grow up in a social or emotionally healthy type of situation. Nehemiah probably suffered a traumatic brain injury as a result of his father's beatings, repeated beatings to the head.
He said that Nehemiah could be rehabilitated and had already made progress at a state psychiatric treatment center. He stated, "We'll see through the evidence that the pattern of living the family was engaged in was very isolating except for when going to church. We'll hear evidence that Nehemiah probably suffered a traumatic injury as a result of his father's beatings." The prosecution decided not to make an opening statement and opted instead to bring on their first witness. Dr. Neil Madan, a clinical radiologist and neurologist, testified that Nehemiah's brain scan didn't prove that Nehemiah had a traumatic brain injury or hemorrhaging. However, he said that it was impossible to completely rule out any diagnosis from the MRI scan alone. Prosecutors would then call psychiatrist Dr. Chris Mohandy to testify during the sentencing phase. He said he asked Nehemiah if he killed his family because his parents were abusive.
And his response was, I don't know, I guess it got worse over the years. The abuse got more and more regularly. I guess I got older and meaner. I was kind of fed up with life.
He said that when Nehemiah spoke about the murders, he appeared to be very detached and spoke in a very matter-of-fact tone.
Something to the effect of I killed Mom and then showed that to this child and then said, you're next. Something to the effect of I killed Mom and then showed that to this child and then said, you're next.
He said that it was his belief that Nehemiah suffered from a mixed personality disorder and that he found no evidence of insanity, which had once been contemplated by the defense, or evidence of a thought disorder. He went on to say that Nehemiah told him during an interview that he had been abused as a young boy and had heard voices in his head, beginning when he was 8 years old, that urged him to act violent. Speaking about Nehemiah's brother, Assistant District Attorney Michelle Pato said, did he explain why he needed to wake his brother up before shooting him? Dr. Madden responded, he told me what he said to his brother. You're next. That was cold and dark. There was a strong flavour of sadism in that statement. It was terrifying. He went on to suggest that Nehemiah had actually enjoyed retelling this incident, that he had told his younger brother that he was next, after showing him the face of his dead mother. Bear in mind, his brother was only 9 years old. He stated, this was conscious, driven by fantasy, proactive, hunting more than defending. His testimony would be followed by testimony from those who interacted with Nehemiah following the shooting. Vince Harrison, the security guard at the church, said that Nehemiah had spent most of the day just wandering around the campus of the church, before disclosing that his family were dead. His girlfriend's grandmother, Joan White, said that his demeanour was very matter-of-fact. She said to the courtroom, he sat there very politely, just answering factual questions. Sheriff's deputy, Miguel Rivas, next spoke about the crime scene. He said that he took numerous photographs inside the home and collected evidence the night the bodies were discovered. It's now been 20 years since the tragic events of 9/11, and despite all those years, many of us remember it like it was just yesterday. America, and even the rest of the world, hasn't been the same since. Raphaelian Media, the King of the World podcast series, explores the impact of that day for the American Muslim community, through the eyes of the host, who's a high school senior at the time. The 7-part series delves into what it has been like as a Muslim living in America these past 20 years. It's presented in a unique and accessible way, covering important topics such as identity, belonging, mental health, and even attempted murder, alongside related international events of the last 20 years, including the war on terror, spying, discrimination, and fear of others. If you're a fan of long-form series such as Serial or the 1619 Project, then The King of the World is for you. Subscribe to King of the World now, wherever you get podcasts. During the third day of the trial, staff from Sequoia Adolescence Treatment Centre would testify. Armando Harris, who supervised teenagers at the centre, said, there were times that he cried. I assumed he was crying because he missed his family. He said that he had arrived at the centre and was very reserved, but began to open up, socialise with others, and even carry himself as a leader. He said that when Nehemiah spoke about his home, he referred to it as the fort. Dr. Stephen Manlove, a forensic psychiatrist at the centre, said that Nehemiah had progressed socially, emotionally, and psychologically since the day of the murder. He said that he focused on three particular factors regarding Nehemiah's amenability to treatment. Those were his maturity, his record, and previous history and prospects for adequate protection of the public. He said that it was his belief that Nehemiah was treatable and that he had already made quite a lot of progress. One teacher at the centre described Nehemiah as a thoughtful student, but said that he had expressed racist viewpoints and had an obsession with Nazis. He went on to say that Nehemiah had been socially isolated with his family and had been homeschooled by his mother, who herself had not finished high school. He said that Nehemiah believed that his mother didn't like him and cited a quote she said, "I wish we were in the biblical age, so I could stone you to death." He went on to describe how Greg was always angry and would teach Nehemiah about the virtues of the military. He said that Greg was always suspicious of the world around him and taught his son to shoot a gun when he was just 14 years old so that he could protect his family. He told the courtroom how Greg didn't want his son hanging around with girls, and on one occasion he had discovered communication with a girl and locked him in the crawl space underneath the home as a punishment. Dr. Manlove had interviewed Nehemiah for 15 hours over multiple occasions and said that there was no question that he had taken responsibility for what he had done. He revealed that in text messages to his girlfriend before the murders had taken place, Nehemiah had told her that he felt insane. He testified, "At some level, he was recognizing that this was bizarre." He went on to reveal that in addition to taking a photograph of his deceased mother's body, he had also taken one of his 9-year-old brother and sent that to his girlfriend too. He testified that the girlfriend had egged Nehemiah on with suggestions of sexual favors to come after he killed his family. Dr. Barry Fields, a forensic psychologist for the state, would tell Judge John Romero that he believed that one day Nehemiah could be treated and become a productive member of society, but not in the 2.5 years until his 21st birthday. He said, "It's complex. I do think he's amenable to treatment. He's salvageable." He said that it was complex because the time period during which he would need to continue secure treatment. He said that while statistically it was low that he would reoffend, he said that the nature of the crimes was horrific. If he were sentenced as juvenile, then the state would lose jurisdiction at the age of 21. But Dr. Fields said that when Nehemiah is 23, his brain would be fully developed. He went on to describe Nehemiah's home life.
"It reaches the level of, you know, certainly dysfunctional, certainly disturbed, and possibly even bizarre."
He disclosed that he had interviewed family members and people who knew the Grego family, and came to the conclusion that both Greg and Sarah were disturbed for different reasons. He said that Greg's conversion to Christianity had changed him for the better, but had also altered his attraction to violence. He would stockpile weapons and force Nehemiah to patrol the home for several hours a day. He spoke about one specific incident wherein Nehemiah's brother threatened him with a gun.
"Apparently loaded gun, pointed it at Nehemiah and said, 'You know, I could kill you,' something like that. This is not a normal household."
He also testified about Nehemiah's response when he asked why he had killed his brothers and sisters.
"Something like, well, it had to be a thorough job or something like that. That's a really weird answer. And it shows no insight whatsoever into his motivations."
Virginia Grego, Nehemiah's aunt, would tell the judge that her nephew had taken strides since his treatment, and spoke of the financial and other stress the family had been under when her brother Greg lost his job at the church. After all of the testimony was presented, closing arguments began. Prosecutor Pato described the murders as predatory and cold-blooded, while defense Stephen Taylor said that Nehemiah had grown up in a chaotic environment and that he had suffered abuse at the hands of his father and likely received a traumatic brain injury. He said that Nehemiah had been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder and had made significant progress. It would now be up to Judge Romero to decide Nehemiah's fate. He ultimately ruled that Nehemiah should be sentenced as a juvenile, which meant that he could potentially be released when he turned 21. Following the announcement, District Attorney Carrie Bradenburg announced that her office would be appealing the ruling in what she called their continued pursuit of justice. Nehemiah's sister, Vanessa, would tell the media that she had forgiven her brother, but was disappointed by the ruling. She said, "I wanted justice for my parents and my siblings. You know, I love my brother and forgave him a long time ago, but I feel like there has to be some consequences for what he did." A few weeks later, it would be time for the sentence to be revealed. 6 family members would provide victim impact statements. The statements would show that there was a divide in the family. Nehemiah's sister, Annette, who blamed some of the family for painting a monstrous portrait of Greg, in particular, which was not true. She said that she and other members of the family wanted Nehemiah to be sentenced as an adult.
While my helpless baby brother rushed to his mother's aid, trying to stop the bleeding and wiping her blood away, Nehemiah pointed the gun at his face and told him he was next.
Eric and Regina Grigo, Greg's brother and sister-in-law, would say that those members who wanted him sentenced as an adult were denying the generational pain and secrets in their family, which had contributed to the murders. Outside of court, some of Greg's family, as well as friends and neighbours, gathered outside holding signs which read, "Killers will always kill, and justice for the Gregos." Judge Romero would rule that Nehemiah would remain in state custody until the age of 21, which was just 2 years away. This meant that as soon as he turned 21, he would be released from the treatment centre as a free man. To many, the decision felt like a slap in the face of justice. Regardless of his home circumstances, Nehemiah had shot and killed 5 family members, including his young siblings. In May, the prosecutor's office filed an appeal of Nehemiah's classification as a juvenile. Around a dozen people gathered at a rally to oppose Nehemiah's sentence as a juvenile. His aunt, Martha Martinez, said that their goal was to keep him behind bars, stating, "A mass murderer does not deserve to get out." There was one aunt and uncle who supported a juvenile sentence for Nehemiah, but much of the family staunchly opposed to it. His uncle, Edwin Mendez, said that he was afraid for not only the family's safety, but the safety of the community if Nehemiah was released when he turned 21. He said, "It's not that we want him to rot in hell. He needs extensive help." Just the following month, Nehemiah was in the media once again, when 35-year-old Amber Lucero, who worked at the treatment centre, was charged with sexual contact of a minor by a person in authority. She was accused of having a sexual relationship with Nehemiah. Some of his family members had learned of the relationship and reported it. Then in October, the Attorney General's office appealed the sentencing of Nehemiah. Attorney General Hector Balderas asked judges with the State Court of Appeals to consider Nehemiah's premeditation, his mental health issues and his violent tendencies as justification to send the case back to court for more hearings. In January of 2018, the New Mexico Court of Appeals was set to hear arguments in the case. In 55 days' time, Nehemiah would be turning 21 and would therefore be released. The prosecution was putting forward the argument that the judge had failed to review several key factors in deciding to sentence Nehemiah as a juvenile. He said that he failed to consider the heinousness of the crime, and testimony from doctors who said that he would not be rehabilitated by the age of 21. New Mexico was a state which prohibited dual sentencing, which meant that the judge only had 2 choices when it came to sentencing. They could sentence somebody as an adult, which would send them to a juvenile prison, or they could sentence them as a juvenile, which meant that they were released at 21 years old, no matter what. There were other states that allowed dual sentencing, which meant that they could give somebody both a juvenile and an adult sentence, or a juvenile sentence followed by probation. While arguments were being heard in the New Mexico Court of Appeals, legislation was being filed by Senator Greg Baca that would allow judges more options when it came to sentencing juvenile offenders. His proposal, Senate Bill 243, would allow judges to impose a dual sentence. When March rolled around, the Court of Appeals still hadn't made a decision, so the prosecution filed a motion to keep Nehemiah detained until the decision was made. Nehemiah would be turning 21 on the 20th of March. On the 9th of March, the Court of Appeals would clear the way for more court proceedings to determine Nehemiah's fate. Judge Michael Martinez would rule that Nehemiah would stay incarcerated pending the outcome of his case. He ordered that he be transferred to an adult prison until then. It wouldn't be until April of 2019 that an amenability hearing was held. There had been a delay because Judge Romero withdrew himself from the case and it was taken over by Judge Alyssa Hart. Prosecutor Diana Garcia would argue that Nehemiah hadn't experienced childhood trauma, and the trauma he had actually experienced in his life had come from the deaths of his family. She said It just appears there's a presumption that he had a traumatic childhood, and I don't think that's unreasonable. We want to be able to place blame on something, and a traumatic childhood would allow us to explain some things. It would ultimately be decided that Nehemiah would be sentenced as an adult. Judge Hart said that there were a number of factors in reaching the decision, including that Nehemiah couldn't explain why he killed his family, and that they were calculated and willful. When asked why he had killed his family, Nehemiah had simply responded that he didn't know. She also factored in the seriousness of the offence. She determined that six factors showed that Nehemiah was not amenable to treatment and rehabilitation as a child, and stated that she could not be satisfied that his release would protect the public. The second sentencing phase would be held in October, and prosecutors announced that they were seeking a life sentence. During the hearing, Nehemiah publicly spoke for the very first time. He apologised for what he had done and said that he wished he could take it back. He apologised specifically to his three older siblings and thanked his aunts and uncles for standing by him.
I am sorry for taking our parents and our sins. You know, I wish I could take it back, but reality is that we can't. I want no retaliation. I love you guys, and I want to see the best for y'all. And whatever you may do, and I do pray for you guys to have healing the way I'm having healing. Nobody's ever shown me that kind of mercy and that kind of compassion the way you guys have. And I'm so damn grateful for you guys. You've basically been a second father to me. You're the father I wish I had.
Nehemiah then addressed the judge.
Even the worst of us can make progress. Even the ones who've been through hell and back can still make it.
Judge Hart would ultimately sentence Nehemiah to three life sentences, which would run concurrently for child abuse resulting in the death of his three siblings. She additionally sentenced him to 7 years for killing each parent. Those sentences would run concurrent to one another, but consecutive to the life sentences. He also got credit for the 2,476 days he had already spent behind bars. This meant that Nehemiah would serve 30 years before he could be released on parole.
When I visited Nehemiah, his reactions for the murders often changed and had little to nothing to do with abuse. One predominant reason he had mentioned multiple times to both my sister Vanessa and I was that he had been hearing voices since he was 12 years old, telling him to kill. If he is released, I believe he will do harm to himself or others. My family and my parents deserve to be remembered for the incredible people they were, and not for the lies that Nehemiah has created to justify his crimes against them.
Statistically, a juvenile who kills multiple members of their family is the rarest type of homicide. In fact, it's 5 times more common for a parent to kill their own child than for a child to kill their own parent. That's why when such a tragedy occurs, it grips the nation. It goes without saying that not all juveniles who commit horrible crimes are bad seeds. And there are many who are susceptible to rehabilitation and deserve to be sentenced as juveniles and given a second chance. However, this was one case that truly split the world's opinion, with many feeling as though the first sentence was an affirmation that the justice system was broken and far too lenient. While Nehemiah Grigo may have suffered abuse, and while he may have had a personality disorder, depending on who you believe, the way he carried out his massacre was beyond comprehension. And 2 years in a juvenile treatment centre was simply inadequate for taking 5 lives. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, a big massive thank you for listening, and also a huge thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Cara, Emma, and Sarah. As you all know, Morbidology is a one-woman team. I research, write, host, and produce the episodes on my own, and the support on Patreon seriously goes such a long way. It helps to defray the cost of filing Freedom of Information requests, which really make Morbidology episodes what they are. It also helps to defray the cost of archive subscriptions, hosting, and much more. If you'd like to join on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. I send out handwritten thank you cards, as well as merch, including t-shirts, stickers, pins, badges, fridge magnets, and key rings. I also upload ad-free and early release episodes, as well as bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular podcast platforms. I also offer behind the scenes for some of the episodes, which includes bonus audio, videos, and even case files that I have obtained via Freedom of Information. I'd also like to take a second to thank everybody who has left a kind review on Apple Podcasts. Ratings and reviews are an easy way to support a show that you like, and I'd love to read your comments. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And please stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Crime and Crime Again. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hi, I'm Chelsea, the host of Crime and Crime Again. On my podcast, I cover lesser-known true crime cases. I tell the stories that you may not have heard before. Join me in bringing light to the stories of the missing and murdered, and being a voice when their own has been silenced. You can find Crime and Crime Again anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROS.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROS.com/morbidology.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.